Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and allegedly legendary radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the My Batteries Are Low and It's Getting Dark show. I mean, kind of an ominous title, I'll grant you, but I'll explain in just a moment. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, special radio wave to the MSU Ronald G. Eglin Space Science Center here at Moorhead State University. Now, to comment on a bunch of things from the University of Kentucky, assistant professor with the Physician Assistant Program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And back from Isonville. The Isonville Consumer Electronics Show, to tell you about our web presence and, in general, get in the way and obstruct the flow of information, the Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure from UK, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. I went someplace that's going to bring back the warmer, softer side, right? So you're just going to have a great show. There's going to be all kinds of information flowing, and I'm not even going to yell at you. Well,
okay.
Maybe not.
No, not for the first segment.
In case you want to record that, oh, by the way, we do record that. We put it at WMKY.org, Moorhead State Public Radio's website. You can find the shows. You can find a list of the most recent shows. Once you've found that, you have found a way to get to the Health Matters archives. Or if you like podcasting, if you say you want to have Health Matters delivered to your device on a regular schedule, that's where you go. Again, you can find that at WMKY.org. After you've listened to the show over and over, and you've become what some people might call a fan of the show. Facebook has these things called fan pages, and you can find our fan page at facebook.com/HMRadioShow. And that page is devoted to all things Health Matters. You know, we all have access to it, and it's your way to interact with the cast and crew of the show. So again, if you want to leave some feedback, give us some show topics, tell us what you liked, what you didn't like. You know, if you thought Tony dressed funny for this show, I mean, that's what that site is for. It's for interaction.
I look good in feathers. That's all I will say. I look good in feathers.
Feathers.
It's just a feather, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a single feather, isn't it?
I'm not sure where the plural's coming from.
But it's better than last week's fig leaf.
we don't want to repeat that. That is not on the webpage.
That
is not.
So, just like that interaction occurred between us, it can happen with you. Facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, 4 things we know for sure about weight loss.
Why not 5?
Because Gina Collada, she is a medical reporter for the New York Times and a darn good one. She's been around for a long time. She's an extraordinarily good writer. And this is her
And you're take. An extraordinarily good reader, so you two are a match made in heaven.
Yeah, we sure are. This is 4 facts, and we'll get to them this fractional portion. First of all, the diet that works for someone else may not work for you. These things are not going to be earth-shattering. We know so little about what works for a diet.
Don't all diets work to some extent?
For somebody, probably so. There is no best diet for weight loss. And it is not like you're missing out. You have an inferior diet. It may not be the right diet for you. You have to keep trying different things. And also, what you did, I had a patient who when he was in high school, he lost a bunch of weight. He ate nothing but meat, and he went to the gym every day. He tried that in his 50s, and he came out with a roaring case of the gout. So, what worked for you 10 years ago probably won't work 10 years later. Most studies comparing diets have produced results that show no differences in weight loss between groups on different diets as long as the calorie intake is the same. So, again, there is not a diet that magically melts off pounds without making you hungry. You may have one that fits your personality, your lifestyle better, but there is not simply one that is clearly superior. George Bray, obesity researcher and professor at the Pennington Biomedical Research Center, advises people, eat the diet you like, and the main thing is stay with it. Fact number 2, the latest fad diet is nothing new and probably nothing magical. The low-carb diets introduced in 1863, calorie-restricting diets, extreme calorie-restricting diets have been around for centuries. Fasting would be the ultimate calorie-restricting diet. You can read what's the latest thing in the magazines, but it's really not the latest thing. We'll stop with that because we've got a lot to talk about today, but our sponsor again, the 4 things we know for sure about weight loss. The first 2, someone else's diet may not work for you, and the latest fad diet is probably nothing that really is new. Now, the title, My Batteries Are Low and It's Getting Dark, those were the last words, according to science journalist Jacob Margolis, the paraphrase, the last words of the Opportunity Mars rover. And I want to talk a little bit about this. This was shut down. There was no messages heard since June 10th, 2018. A massive dust storm clogged the solar panels. They had hoped that they might blow clear and perhaps regain enough power to charge the battery and save the rover. But now a Martian winter is setting in. Its solar panels are clogged. Its batteries are dying. It needs that heat to keep its machinery warm enough to function. And so we are wishing it a fond farewell. And they have terminated that mission as of about a week before, or a couple of weeks before this show aired. A little bit about this. This was a remarkable scientific achievement. It was designed for a 90-day mission and 1,000 meters, about 1,000 yards of travel. 15 years and more than 45,000 meters later, a 90-day mission turns into 15 years, 1,000 meters turns into 45,000 meters. The longest one-day distance traveled, 220 meters, 2.5 football fields in 2005. It was stuck in the sand that same year for nearly 5 weeks, but managed to extricate itself. Sent more than 217,000 images back to Earth. And in the end, it sent data indicating that its batteries were low and it's getting dark. And that's...
it's kind of sad.
It's extremely sad. They very much humanized this thing. It was, as a piece of scientific equipment, the amount of information we got for it is absolutely absolutely priceless. But now going into a Martian winter with no ability to generate solar energy... it looks like it is gone. It is another thing for Matt Damon to salvage in trying to escape from the planet whenever he gets stuck there again. So, first item I want to talk about is Americans going to Mexico to buy insulin. This was a partnership from Side Effects Public Media, NPR, and Kaiser Health News. According to the U.S. government, about 1 million people in California alone go over to Mexico every year for health care, including buying prescription drugs. Between 150 and 300,000 Americans list health care as a reason for traveling abroad. And this is surgery, this is medical care, and this is getting cheap prescriptions. Now, this thing is starting to ramp up in Utah last year, their public employee health plan. The insurance that Utah public health employees have, it has a pharmacy tourism program. If you use any of 13 costly prescription medicines, the insurance plan will pay your way for you and a companion to fly to San Diego and then drive across the border to Tijuana, Mexico, and pick up a 90-day supply of your very expensive medicines. So these are $4,500 per month medicines, and you can get those for one-third of that, about $1,500 in Mexico or less. And so for them, it's worth the money.
It's probably not just Tijuana either. It's probably all those southern border states.
Correct. The Utah plan is San Diego, Tijuana. But you're right.
I went to high school in very, very southern Arizona, about 20, 25 miles north of the border, and lots of people did that.
State Representative Norm Thurston, who he's a healthcare economist, he championed the bill. He said that he expects the state will save around $1 million in the next 6 months on healthcare costs just by sending employees to Mexico. It is, according to the FDA, illegal to import drugs into the U.S. for personal use, but the agency's website provides guidance about when you could do it, and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection website has a whole section on traveling with medications. There has never been a single person prosecuted for bringing a 90-day supply of medicines into the country. They mentioned Liza Greenside in this article. Her daughter has type 1 diabetes. The insulin pens cost $700 in the U.S., $65 in Quebec City, Canada. She said, I asked the pharmacist, do you have any idea what it's like to get insulin in the U.S.? It's more expensive. And he said, why would we want to make it difficult? You need insulin to live. So they compared, they traveled the world. Again, $700 in the U.S., $73 in Germany, $57 in Tel Aviv, $51 in Greece, $61 in Rome, $40 in Taiwan. 90-day supply.
So they'd have to go every 90 days.
Yeah. The thing is, while you're abroad, you can pick up some duty-free stuff, or you can pick up local souvenirs, things like that. Or you could pick up a 90-day supply of your medicine.
How do they get the prescription for it? Or is it off prescription?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know the details of this. I have some patients who mail order it in, and I have some people with dual citizenship who apparently they just go up there and purchase when they're up there. And I think you can get it sent from your pharmacy. You don't have to get a separate prescription. I think you can get your pharmacy to send over, and you just get a refill there. And I suppose you could bring in a prescription from a U.S. doctor, but to be honest with you, I don't know the details of that. I have not written a prescription that I know was used in another country.
Interesting.
Would you do it?
Would I do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would.
This would like finance a couple of very nice days in Canada if you got a $700 prescription for 65.
Right. And if you were going to get twice that much, you have a real nice vacation.
Yeah. So
we have EpiPens for my son. He has a food allergy. And so, I'm getting ready to go to Ecuador. If I knew I could take a prescription and get it for less than $300, that would be pretty sweet.
I was wondering. I mean, I thought you were hesitating, but what's happening is the wheels are turning there, aren't they? You're thinking, hey, this might pan out here. I've got to think about this.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about life-saving medications, it makes perfect sense that it should be accessible to people who need it to save their life. I mean,
it's a sad state of affairs, the fact that we do this. We finance, essentially, the research, development, and a lot of the advertising of these medications by the fact that we are held hostage. We have the highest prescription drug prices in the world. Now, some people say, compared to our average income, they're about right. It's, after all, you're wrestling these EpiPens away from some Ecuadorian family that has a fraction of your income. You imperialist pig.
Hey, I've not done it yet.
Just considering being an imperialist pig.
Right. Just thinking about it.
I got a feeling they're going to make more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I
pumping money into the Ecuadorian economy, and you're also getting a fantastic deal on your medications. I don't know which.
Yeah, that whole thing is just, a product of, to me, an insurance model that's just broken.
Yes.
That it can touch every aspect of our healthcare, including our prescription drug benefits, and actually cause prices to be higher.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed, honestly, that it comes to this. I don't know.
We need a wall.
No, I think we need a gate
to keep
a gate.
Life-saving medications out.
We'll let Rick ponder his massive mistake in the first fractional portion and let him try again next time.
Well, the wall's going to be between the two of us.
You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the My Batteries Are Low and It's Getting Dark show. Our salute to the recently decommissioned and forever lost Opportunity rover that NASA planted on Mars for a 90-day mission that turned into 15 years. And the thing finally bogged down, ironically, because of a sandstorm covering its solar panels. It was going fine until that point, and then it lost its ability to renew its energy. The sponsor for the second time, the four things we know for sure about weight loss. Again, number one was diet works for somebody else, may not work for you. Number two was the latest fad diet is nothing new. That is, we keep recycling the same ideas on calorie restriction, on food choices, and so forth. But there is really not a diet that is so far technically advanced over what has been done before. Now we're up to number three, and this is Gina Colata, who is a science writer for the New York Times and does excellent health writing. Number three, it's unreasonable to expect conclusive answers from diet studies. There are two types of diet studies. One is we look at people who eat a certain food and people who don't, and we try to figure out all the other things that are different about these people and cancel them out, but we can't. There is a reason why some people eat nachos at the ballpark, and a reason why some people will eat vegan. And there are so many other things that go along with that that it's very hard to sort that out and say this is definitely due to the diet. And then the second thing, if we did randomize people, I told Shelly, you're eating this, Rick, you're not eating this. We can't follow them for 20 or 30 years to see what happens. We're going to report that out in 5 years tops. So we cannot get the kind of things where for their lifetime, one group of people randomly is eating a certain food and another group is not.
But can you really get a group to eat food the same for 5 years?
No, I think, one of the trials on the Mediterranean diet, they just delivered olive oil weekly. Now, whether they poured it down the drain or whether they used it religiously or whether they took a bath in it, no one really knows. But delivering the olive oil produced improvement in their cardiovascular risk. And so we believe that the Mediterranean diet's a good thing. But you're right, Rick. I mean, once behind closed doors, anything can happen. You hope that people who are participating in these research studies are not frauds. They're not in it for the fame of being a research study participant, whatever that is. So you hope they will deal honestly. But you're right. You can't tell. And even if you could, you can't follow them long enough to see the kind of differences we want. So as a result, says Gina Collada, most diet studies lead to skepticism, argument, and debate. And you see that among the experts. For a long time, the low-carb diets, the so-called Atkins diet, Atkins was considered to be a charlatan and a fraud. And eventually people said, well, he does have a point that calorie restriction without necessarily going to low-fat can have benefits. So this is nothing new. We have never been real clear about our research. And then number four, healthier diets don't always result in weight loss. Diets that revolve around calorie restriction will lead to weight loss, but diets that focus on healthy food consumption are not always low in calories. It is not true that simply eating healthier foods will help you lose weight on its own. You can eat too much healthy foods, and you can gain weight on healthy foods. And that's not much, is it? Someone else's diet won't work for you. Fad diets are not new. It is unreasonable to expect the research to help you out. And healthy diets don't always result in weight loss. Those are four things we know for certain, according to Gina Collada at the New York Times. But knowing that doesn't necessarily then provoke a action. I don't know what you would do knowing those things. But it sort of tells you the state of diet today, which is kind of frustrating for those of us who try to help people to better health. That's our sponsor, Four Things We Know For Sure About Weight Loss. Now, I'll tell you, do not say this show is not spontaneous. Because I had a script. I've got an article that I want to go through in the Mayo Clinic proceedings in January that I think is very valuable in terms of helping people to better health. But on the way over, I saw an announcement. Walmart now has dropped the price for their employees, not their customers, but their employees. They have dropped the price of their employees. Seeing a virtual doctor on their computer, they have dropped that price from $40 a visit down to $4 a visit.
Now, is this kind of like that virtual therapist robot thing?
No, this is a real person who may or may not be wearing pants, but is on a TV screen in front of you and is talking to you about your condition. Now, they cannot obviously examine your heart, look in your ear. They cannot swab your throat for strep or anything like that. But they can talk about symptoms, and they can prescribe and enter a prescription and send that to your pharmacy. So you can have an interaction with them, and if necessary, you can get medicine from them.
So I'm assuming it would be the Walmart pharmacy. Is this acute stuff only?
I don't think they have any limits. You can see them. Okay. I mean, and that was really the speculation. So for half of the economy car wash, you can see a physician.
And I'll be honest, you got the economy car wash on the way over because I chastised you because a real car wash takes more than that, a lot more than that.
Rick takes better care of his car than I do. I wash the salt off, and Rick apparently goes for
the deluxe.
I'm surprised
you don't get quarters and do yours.
Do you do the tire shine? I mean, you shine your tires, don't you?
I take it to one of these things that it goes through the machine, but they kind of clean it before and after.
Are the tires black when you come out?
Yes.
Okay. So you do that?
Yes. And I have a 10-year-old car that looks like it's 3 years old.
Just wonderful with healthy-looking tires.
Exactly. Well, that's because I changed my tires.
Well, no. I mean, the tires can be any color.
But you can see your reflection in them if that's what you're saying.
Shiny tires, it means a lot to you. People can tell right away. I'm not a car aficionado. I do not drive a
vintage. Well, first off, you have a truck.
I have a truck. I've got a very high-mileage car that's cheap. That's what I have. If it's weather's
good.
Not
that I'm surprised.
But back to, I mean, so this is it. Back to the subject here.
So Walmart, again, you're just out of touch with the car wash.
Walmart has cut their price from $40 for their employees to $4. Now, if you could talk to a doctor for $4.
And not have to wear pants.
Do you believe as a doctor that you'll be taken just as serious over this video system as you would be on the... What do you think?
All right, so
and now we've trivialized it to where it's only $4. So I got a guy who a guy or a woman, I guess, who may or may not. I may be sitting there the whole time going, I wonder if they're wearing anything. You know, I mean, because they could be sitting on that meeting. Who knows where they're at? You don't know where they're at. You don't know what they're. Yeah. And then on top of that, it only cost me $4.
I have medical students, and I said, you know, you've seen that commercial.
I'm not going to tell you to restart your computer for $4.
Goes, yeah, you think about where the, and so what Walmart is trying to do is they are trying to change culture. They're trying to flood their system with employees calling in and spending their $4. And if you think about it, for $4, you could talk about absolutely anything.
Well, I mean...
Well, get mental health counseling, get smoking cessation. You can
I mean,
talk
what
about
sales are going on at Walmart?
Right. Or
parenting tips.
That was the thing we talked about. What if you got your computer and you chased your kid around trying to show the doctor that limp or the little smacking movements they make when they get their favorite toy? Is this a seizure, doctor? You know, for $4, you know, look. Okay, so they didn't do it today. Tell you what, I'll spend $4 more. I'll call you tomorrow.
But do we believe that for $4, I'm going to dial a number, and then all of a sudden the white coat's going to appear on the screen? Or is there going to be some kind of a process to get to that? I mean,
no,
they're not going to have any kind of triage or any kind of
– Nope.
I mean, basically, you just swipe your credit card, and boom, you get a white coat.
That's the way the system works now, as you well know. And full disclosure here, Rick was involved very early on in his career in telemedicine. He established systems for the University of Kentucky and troubleshot them. As a matter of fact, that's how he got out of St. Clair and Moorhead in the first place.
Did the first telemedicine visit in Ethiopia.
Yep. So he knows about the technology, and you're absolutely right, Rick. There is no barrier, and that, I think, is the idea, is they're trying to increase utilization, so they're trying to remove all barriers, including cost. This $4 is so trivial, the only thing is then you're probably not going to call them up and ask them if they've got Prince Albert in a can. You know, other than that, everything's fair game.
I guess. It just feels to me like you've trivialized the answer.
Well, I obviously it won't work as a long-term strategy because $4 is barely enough to keep the lights on.
I mean, at this point, they should have just charged $40 per month, and you can get as many as you want.
Well, you know, you look at and you're what is the future medical visit going to look like? I know the guys at Vanderbilt. I mentioned this to Shelley as well. They are working on an assistant, sort of an Alexa for the exam room. So instead of me typing on my screen, which is what I do now, and ignoring the patient who's right in front of me, I could be over there interacting with the patient. I could ask Alexa when they had their last mammogram what their cholesterol level is. I could ask Alexa what vaccinations they need. I could ask Alexa to schedule them a referral to orthopedics or to set up a follow-up visit with me or send a prescription to the pharmacy. And at that point, I'm totally interacting with the patient, and Alexa's doing all that paperwork that I have to do now. It's a marvelous idea, but we may never even get to that. By the time Alexa's developed, we're going to be doing these virtual, and so I am not even in the room at that point. And I don't need Alexa. Alexa's something that's sitting on my my second or third computer screen while I'm in my underwear doing a video doctoring, and I'm not even in the room. Where is medicine going to go? I mean, it is absolutely fascinating, these different alternative strategies for trying to make it more convenient.
Well, in making it convenient, though, we still have to get the trust of the patient. You know, and that's – I don't know that I would trust advice from a $4 call-in, you know.
See, what is wrong with this woman that she's best she can do is be on a TV screen, right?
I mean, come on. I can go to Lowe's and pay more for a doorstop.
The $4, it really is interesting, the idea. You could, and you think, well, then you could call them every night.
But hey, Tony, what I mean, how many of these do you got to see to pay for that medical degree you got?
Well, obviously, it's a loss leader for them. Walmart is they're willing to take that loss to try to change how their employees approach medical care.
Well, what's this going to do for all the call-in psychics? Because it's not $4.
Well, again, the cost of it is one thing, but the idea, if they are successful in changing the culture, if medical care, in fact, is delivered online, then all of a sudden all the money we spend on trying to make the electronic medical record work better live becomes less valuable. As we essentially we can record this and we don't really need to figure out a better way to put an electronic medical record together. I mean, we will, but it does put it creates a whole different system that will be necessary. What we need then is we need to start selling people stethoscope apps that they can attach to their phone or things that they can broadcast the what their ear looks like. So that we can improve the diagnostic capabilities of these doctors that are sitting on the computer. So, and we call them peripherals in the telemedicine business, but I think that's going to wind up that these will be USB or
sure.
Dongle attachments.
Sure. I mean, it's good that they're trying. I mean, who knows if it'll be successful.
I would say there are times, but the thing is, I would pay the $4 on a weekend or something like that. You know, I really have something. I need an antibiotic. I need something looked at or something like that. I'd say okay, I'll pay that. I got some places on my, some skin things and so forth that I picked up. I'd say yeah, for $4. What do you think it is? It could work.
Yeah, but would it be a dermatologist? I mean, that's the thing.
No, it wouldn't be a dermatologist. You couldn't get a dermatologist. I mean, you would hemorrhage cash if you were trying to pay a dermatologist $4 to do.
Exactly. So what does that do to specialized medicine? I mean, what does that do to our cardiologists and our GI docs?
I see. So now you're saying, we're devaluing primary care. You don't see a cardiologist for any $4.
Right.
I mean, the cardiologist would charge $14.
I think you devalued the entire medical practice, but that's okay. I agree. You can go more specific here.
All right. Something to think about. Plan your medical future and figure out what you think is going to happen. That's it. Anyway, next on. This is the one I really wanted to get to. We've already talked away most of the segment, but we'll give our best. This is Mayo Clinic Proceedings, January 2019. Exceptional human longevity. That is the longest of the long-lived people. What do we know about them? And this was just a terrifically written a review of what we know about living for a long time. And I pulled out 14 points, and I will just run these 14 points. Shelley has already looked at it. She's ready. She's armed and ready to argue with me and enlighten our radio fans. And Rick, of course.
I'm just here.
Yeah. So, number one, human longevity exceeds 115 years. Reliably reported ages of 122 for Jean Calme, who's in France, and 116 for Jiromon Kimura in Japan. And I know I missed both those names.
I wouldn't want to live that long.
I can't conceive of it, of living to 122 years. You know, after a while, there would be a sameness about it that it would be boring, to be honest. Even, I mean, they're in excellent health. They're mm-hmm. not in pain. They're not lying in bed. They're mentally sharp, and they're able to do things for themselves. But still, 122 years.
It'd be just a completely different world. You start, you know, you're losing your family and your friends, maybe your kids, grandkids. I just would not want to live that long.
And I would say, you know, both of us have had that experience with people who outlived their family and friends and wound up feeling that they had somehow missed out on something.
They're not happy people.
Sounds like both of y'all watched Bicentennial Man.
So point number two, over the past two decades, the ages at death of the longest surviving people has not risen. That is, with all the medical care we've got, we have made more people live longer, but we have not increased that very top age. It's still looking at 116 to 122. That hasn't changed in more than 20 years. Number three, 43% of both male and female centenarians, people who live to 100 or over, they reach age 80 before experiencing any age-associated illness. If there's an absence of any disease diagnosis in 15% of female and 30% of male centenarians at the age of 100 years. So there is one pathway to extreme old age where you simply don't have any diseases. Whether it's, and we'll talk about genetics and environment, but for whatever reason. 25% of the centenarians are cognitively intact. 25% of them. One quarter of people at age 100 are cognitively intact. They can't find any signs of cognitive decay. And among those who reach 100 years of age and are not cognitively intact. The vast majority have delayed onset of impairment until average age 92. So if you are already experiencing mental decline in your 80s, you're probably not going to make it to 100, no matter what else is going on.
I don't think I'm going to make it.
I'm pretty sure my mental decline has started in my 50s.
We're all looking at each other going, okay.
What's the number on that to get to 80?
Yeah. Well, you ought to be able to figure that out, Rick. I've never seen it put that way before, which is why I wrote that one down. Cognitively intact, 25% at age 100, and average, if they're not cognitively intact, they had onset of impairment after age 92. Average of the people living to 100. Fact number five, despite the evidence that genetic influence can positively affect longevity, environmental factors exert greater effects. 25% of the variance in human lifespan can be traced back to genetic differences. 25%.
Only 25%.
I know. And see, all the time I hear people saying, you know, this runs in my family or it doesn't run in my family. And this expert studying people who lived over 100 says, I can only see 25% of this due to genes. A lot of it is something else. And that gives us all hope that we can at least extend our life expectancy if we are, if we somehow avoid doing the wrong thing, I guess.
And I have a hard time believing that with the other stats. You know, with the percentage who don't have any health problems until after 80, or the percentage that don't have any sort of cognitive decline, that just seems genetic.
And the ones I know, all of them had longevity in the family. I think I'd agree, but I guess it depends on how you define the genetic influence, I think. We're out of time in this fractional portion. We're going to pick this up on our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the My Batteries Are Low and It's Getting Dark show. Our salute to the Mars Opportunity rover, recently decommissioned after, what did we say,
15 years.
And of exploring the surface of Mars. A remarkable piece of technology, remarkable accomplishment. Our sponsor for the final time, the four things we know for sure about weight loss, and I will move through them rather quickly. We have a lot to talk about. The first, the diet that works for someone else may not work for you, or the diet that you used previously may not work the second time. You have to adapt. You have to try things and see if you can find a way to restrict your calories enough that you're able to lose weight. Secondly, the latest fad diet is nothing new. There really is not. We are not advancing the science of dieting for weight loss. We are not coming up with brand new combinations of things that are meaningful. Most of these diets have been tried in various forms and fashions for decades, if not centuries. Number three, it's unreasonable to expect conclusive answers from diet studies. Again, these are a different way of looking at things, something that we might try. The problem is the randomized trials where we have half the people doing one thing and half doing the other would have to last for 20 or 30 years. If we look at people who've done something for 20 or 30 years, those people may be different in some way we cannot figure out from the ones who are not
doing
that
thing. What do they call those, longitudinal studies?
Yeah, longitudinal observational studies.
Gotcha.
They're helpful. I mean,
we've talked about the one, the big nurses went overseas for years.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing that one for years.
Yeah. There's a women's health initiative. There's a nurses study. There's also one among healthcare providers for men. And they do a complete examination. They give them all sorts of questionnaires, and then they follow them for 20 or 30 years. The problem is, again, trying to tease out the things that are connected that we don't see the connections. There is a reason why some people eat differently, exercise differently, live differently, and we're not necessarily getting at that in our observational studies. So these give us opportunities, things to try out. But again, we don't get conclusive answers from any diet studies. And then finally, a healthier diet doesn't always result in weight loss. It is a matter of calories out, calories in. There are some ways you can manipulate that possibly by eating earlier in the day, later in the day, and so forth. But the bottom line is you can eat very healthy food and still gain weight if you eat too much of it. That's our sponsor, the Four Things. Thanks to Gina Collada, who is a science writer for the New York Times, for that article. And this is a summary of that. We were back now to exceptional human longevity. And let me just run through the points we made so far. This was from the Mayo Clinic proceedings. This was a Mayo Clinic specialist who wrote this review January 2019. First of all, the life expectancy is over 115 years. But secondly, it hasn't changed much over the last 20 years. We have done a lot of things which have raised our average life expectancy, but we are not moving the ceiling up further with all of the things that we've, all the medical advances we've made. Third, one way to extreme longevity, 43% of male and female centenarians, people who live to 100 or more, they reach age 80 before they have any illnesses at all. And then there's an absence of any diseases in a diagnosis in 15% of the female and 30% of male people at age 100. Then number four we mentioned, 25% are cognitively intact. The average age for those who are not cognitively intact, people who have mental impairment, average age it starts at age 92. If you in fact are starting, or someone you love is starting to lose their mental faculties in their 70s or 80s, it appears then that they would be less likely to make it to 100, no matter what their family is. And five, which we ended on, and we're really, I'm still not certain about, 25% of the variance in human lifespan can be traced back to the genes.
See, I think that's low.
Behavior, environment, health practices can profoundly affect the potential for long life. I certainly agree with that, but the people I know, when you're talking about getting to over 100, I don't see that suddenly emerging in a person who has a family history of early demise. I just don't see that, ever.
But do you think with the state of health in Eastern Kentucky, we could take all these environmental things, implement them in our kids, and they're going to live to be over 100?
We could certainly, this area, this region is ripe for some type of intervention because our life expectancy is declining, and it is already the lowest in the United States. There's counties in southeastern Kentucky that have the lowest life expectancy in the United States. So if you're going to put one of those interventions in, and please do, come to Eastern Kentucky. We're inviting you in. We will help you. We'll show you around, introduce you. Make sure you know the people at Walmart and the other fine establishments here in Eastern Kentucky. And you do your intervention. And certainly, if you're going to try to increase life expectancy, you can do it here. However, I don't think you're going to get people up to 100 in Eastern Kentucky with any intervention. But prove me wrong.
But what's a win? I mean, what's a win? So we can target the 100 mark, but I mean, it'd be nice if we saw average ages by region, because I bet we could add 20 years to it.
I think realistically we could add 10, because there is already a 10-year gap between the average life expectancy in the wealthier counties in Kentucky and the poorer counties in Kentucky. It's one of the largest gaps in the United States. So my expectation was to be to bring everyone up to our top level. And that means that Owsley County, Perry County, places in southeastern Kentucky that are extremely impoverished and have not the best health care facilities and healthy environments for living, we should be able to bring that up to the level of Oldham County, Fayette County, and places that have more resources. That just seems so obvious. That seems so, if we allocated our resources properly, that should happen, and it's not. Okinawa is one area where there is a cluster, a concentration of people who live over 100. And one of the things that they think, again, we're talking about environmental things, there is a culture there of Harahasibu. Now, I know I blew it. I'm just reading stuff, and I'm reading it wrong. But the English translation is, eat until you're only 80% full. And so calorie restriction and the average maintaining a lean body weight and perhaps losing weight as you get older may be one of the biggest things you can do.
You'd have to eat more slowly, too, because I think I would blow right past that 80% quickly.
I hit 80% in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's a cultural thing that would have to
We'd have to slow down, and that means that someone would have to give me enough time to eat in between all the other things that I'm doing. And then going on, and these are just points that after I read this review, I wrote these down. Seventh-day Adventists outlive their fellow citizens by 5 to 10 years. So there's your intervention. You become a Seventh-day Adventist. Their religious faith requires abstinence from alcohol and tobacco. It recommends a vegetarian diet that's followed by many. And lifespan is increased in regular churchgoers, no matter what their religious faith is. So attending some type of church service regularly, vegetarian diet, abstaining from alcohol and tobacco, according that will, and I assume that's in mostly in Utah, will get you 5 or 10 years over your neighbors. So, Rick, there's, you know, that's a pretty simple intervention if you could make it work. Number 9, the likelihood of living to 100 appears to be greater for the offspring of younger versus older mothers, whereas the age of the father doesn't matter, which...
I mean, come on. Did we... Of course.
Well, I mean, the idea, I assume, is that the eggs of the young women are fresher. I mean, that was hugely sexist. I will sign off the air now. And
and for $4, you can tell somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the point is, I mean, there is, as a person gets older, perhaps the genetics is not, the genes are, I don't know what I'm saying. They are not gifted with excellent genes if they have an older mother.
Well, we're back to that gene versus environment thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the genes or is it the environment?
Right, and if it's only 25%, then that this may be true, but may not be relevant if your mother is older. There were certain things about the children of older mothers, and we were wrong in our research, and I wonder if this may be a part of that. Mothers who had children when they're older had more children, and were generally poorer, and so their later kids did not turn out as well as people who only had a few kids, and had them at a younger age. So it may not have anything to do with maternal age, but at any rate, the observational data says older age is not as good. Number 10 here. Despite the greater longevity of women, functional status is better in older men compared with older women. Well, again, greater bone mass to start with, greater muscle mass to start with is a good thing. If you are a woman, try to increase your bone mass and muscle mass. If you want to live to 100, lift weights, exercise, do weight-bearing exercises, and try to hang on to your bones and muscles as long as possible because they are not as you don't have as much as men do. That makes perfect sense to me. Men are still stupid.
Can't fix that.
No.
Right. So the smarter ones, I guess, live to be older.
All right. All right. So I don't think it is related to intelligence. There was nothing in this article that said anything
about IQ.
Well,
there's two kinds of intelligence here, Tony.
I mean, well, the absence of stupidity, it helps you get to 100. But in terms of more intelligent people being...
But aren't there stupid things that everybody does and then there's stupid things that men do?
Yeah.
I mean, really, you're just trying to get rid of the stupid things men do.
Yeah. I'm looking at you got me, Rick.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean we have our own category of stupid.
Yeah. And in some cases
and here's the funny thing. We learned it as a way to find women. It's part of the way that men are built.
All right.
They are built to actually stand out in a crowd, right. so that they can attract a woman.
So we go there. So what we do is again, keep in mind.
So the women have trained us to not live as long.
Older women have offspring, have children that don't live quite as long, whereas male age doesn't matter. And the reason male age doesn't matter is the men who are most desirable are the ones who die young, doing stupid things, trying to be desirable.
Exactly.
Could be, yeah.
And then we get trained to be... in that state, it ends up shortening our life.
This was such a great article in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. And it's just not working out on the radio. I feel bad about this. I'm so sorry to our radio fans. I know you expected a good show. And we started off so
well. Come on, Tony.
So
why would they listen if they expected a good show?
Number 11, resiliency, or the ability to adequately respond to or resist stressors, plays a key role. Despite the paucity of studies that address interventions that promote resiliency, animal studies suggest that exercise, compared with calorie restriction, promotes resilience. Now, the thing about resilience is then, if you want to live to be 100, you don't seek out a stress-free life. You seek out the ability to handle and manage stress. That, in my mind, that's what I'm hearing with this, and I may be misinterpreting it, but that's what I got. I just read you word for word what they had in the Mayo Clinic article, and from that I got that simply a stress-free life does not necessarily help you live to be 100. The way you adapt to it. And they mentioned also then, especially as you get older, I think this for me is true watching my patients. When you get in your 70s and 80s, a regular exercise program is absolutely a godsend. You can loosen up a little on the diet, but you have to have a regular exercise program in your 70s and 80s in order to have a shot at a long and getting into your 90s and being happy. Number 12, dietary modification with moderate calorie restriction to achieve and maintain ideal weight, exercise, healthy behaviors, and avoidance of smoking and excessive drinking, active engagement, development of social networks, and support systems are strategies to promote longevity. There are a lot of people who feel that a calorie restriction with a gradual weight loss and actually moving down to the low end of the weight spectrum promotes extreme longevity. Not proven, theorized. And I don't know how I feel about that. I hate to see my older patients losing that muscle mass that we talked mm-hmm. about and losing functional capacity by getting too thin. Mm-hmm. So that is a tough one if you're going to try to calorie restrict and drop your weight as you get older. I think that's hard.
Well, what about the social network? And there's some, you know, the younger generation, they've got all this technology that they're interacting with that has become part of their social network. Is that, you think, as good as face-to-face?
It's a huge experiment, isn't it? I'm going to ask my doctor, my $4 doctor tonight, what he thinks about it, because I don't know.
You want me to loan you some money?
But, that's interesting to see what the quality of the social network, does that make a difference?
In the case of church, we know that people who watch church on TV do not get the life extension of people who go. But once again, it's observational, and it may be the fact that they can get out and go to church is the thing, not the fact that they do. But for whatever reason, right now, watching a service is not the same as attending church and being a part of a service. Who knows? I think it's a really good question. Is the virtual social network, which is ongoing and constant and can maintain long-term relationships across geographic distance, is that a better solution than a live social network? And the human interactions you have with that.
It could be global and more intellectually stimulating as well if you have a...
Good point.
I don't know.
Or you could have $4 doctors all over the world.
Yeah.
Your social network could be your $4 doctors.
I will buy my social network $4 at a time.
So it's cheaper to still not understand what they're telling you.
Exactly.
All right, number 13, we got two more here, and we got just enough time. I think we'll probably get through them.
The
increased physical activity promotes life expectancy irrespective of body mass index. Whether you are overweight, underweight, if you increase your physical activity, it increases your life expectancy. And let me read this. It is a dominant factor in benefiting survival and healthy life in adults over age 74. You must in your 70s exercise regularly and increase your physical activity. You have to do this if you're going to be happy in your 80s.
So you should golf until you're in your coffin.
Golfing until coffin is Rick's bumper sticker way of approaching
it. Right.
I didn't say that. That's not what, but you can coin that if you want. But I'm just saying, you know, there's a couple of games you can play into your very old ages.
Yeah.
And obviously that's good for you.
So hiking would be one activity.
I would think the risk of falls would be too great, and you wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, sure, you'd say that. Now, the thing about golfing, though, particularly for women, is the strokes, you can fracture a vertebra by that twisting motion if you're trying to drive the ball distance in your 80s.
Sure, but, you know.
Putt-putt.
But, I mean, if you're out hiking, I mean, you get a fall, and that's deadly. To a 74-year-old.
Well, I'm not talking about rock climbing, Rick. I'm just talking about walking on trails. Stay on the forest floor. Don't climb the rocks. You could do it. I hope to be doing it in my 70s. So I think the thing about it, though, that I will agree with you, it's got to be fun. And it probably needs to be varied. You need to swim a little bit, but not a lot.
Better if it's social.
Yeah. At least then somebody's going to miss you if you don't show up that day. I would agree with that. And so golf is a social thing. In terms of physical activity, you know, you can golf without basically golf from the cart if you don't want to exercise at all. But properly done, golf will be a good one, I think.
Well, because you walk a lot. No matter whether you get a card or no, you still walk a lot.
14, benefits of cancer screening vary widely. Cancer screening fails to confer any benefit if life expectancy is less than 5 years. That is all the time we've got. Rick, get us off the air immediately, please.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these four things we know for sure about Health Matters.
The radio that works for someone else may not work for you. Experts can't say which radio is best for our show because people's ears react to Health Matters in different ways. Choose the radio and the show that works best for you.
The latest radio fad is nothing new, and so probably nothing magical. It's easy to get caught up in our latest show, but it's also important to know that most of the topics we discuss are decades old.
It's unreasonable to expect a high-quality show from Health Matters. Most of our shows are slapdash, which means listeners rarely know if we know what we're talking about. As a result, most of our shows lead to skepticism, argument, and debate.
Finally, Health Matters doesn't always result in better health. Shows that revolve around calorie restriction will lead to weight loss, but shows that focus on healthy food consumption are not always entertaining. The reverse is also true. Some shows simply are not healthy, even if you are listening closely. So how do you know if your current Health Matters radio show is considered healthy? Experts say most of their research supports shows that are hosted by experts such as themselves.
Whatever you do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.